Take back the city for yourself tonight. I'll take back the city for me. Take back the city for yourself tonight. Whoa, whoa.
God knows you put your life. Welcome to Third Paradigm, a weekly think tank on how to take back our cities, farmland, and water, our money, production, and trade, our media, education, and culture, our religion, and even our God. Our goal is that each community in the world be able to use their own resources to feed and nurture their children. Our method is localization combined with global solidarity, because it takes a network to undermine an empire. I'm your host, Teresa Caraggio, broadcasting through Free Radio Santa Cruz and Upstart Radio Online. Welcome to the 15th episode of Third Paradigm, entitled The Man Who Brought God to Guantanamo. For several months, the book Enemy Combatant by Moazzam Begg sat on my bookshelf. Every time I looked at it, I thought, I really should read that. But I was afraid. Afraid of facing the graphic details of the horror and how it would haunt me. Afraid that I wouldn't be able to go through the motions of my life once I started. Still, I believe that if you don't have to live it, the least you can do is be a witness. When I finally worked up the courage to open the first page, I found that I couldn't put it down. It wasn't from morbid fascination with abusive power, but from seeing a strength and resilience in humanity that I hadn't imagined. It was like finally reaching Dante's innermost circle of hell and finding that God is waiting there. In our feature, I'll talk about why, for me, Moazzam Begg is the man who brought God to Guantanamo, or rather, who brought me to where I could see God in Guantanamo. We'll also hear from another author, a long-ago prisoner of Hitler's camps, who gives a startling witness to God in Buchenwald. But first, we'll read excerpts of poems from Guantanamo, subtitled The Detainees Speak. It's edited by Mark Falkoff, one of the lawyers defending the detainees. In his preface, he described how, in the camps, poetry has become a means of sanity and survival, as essential as water. When there was no paper, poems were scratched with a fingernail on styrofoam cups, collected and trashed each night. Even when pencils and paper became available, few of the poems have seen the declassified light of day. Although it seems like the ephemeral nature of this writing would be discouraging, the act of composing poems has been the only thing felt as not futile. The poets range from professional journalists to truck drivers to teenage boys, who never thought of themselves as poets. Maybe our English teachers were wrong about the way to motivate young authors. Perhaps poetry is essentially an act of honesty. And we, living in our boob tube sitcom bubbles, want shows like 24 and Lost to tell us that torture's okay as long as it's the good guys who are doing it. The last thing we want is honesty. When I say that we'll read the poems, this time I'm not using the royal we, and I actually mean it. I'll be reading short descriptions of the authors, and then Bob will read the poems. The music in the background is No Luck Club with Better Times Will Come and Grails with Dead Vine Blues. Shaker Abdurrahim Amer is a Saudi citizen and a British resident detained since 2002 for his alleged ties to Al-Qaeda, because of his work in Afghanistan for a Saudi charity, the Al-Haramin Foundation, suspected of funneling money to terrorist organizations. A leader among the detainees, he negotiated an end to a hunger strike in exchange for allowing them to form a grievance committee and to be treated consistently with the Geneva Conventions. In 2005, days after the committee was formed, the military disbanded it and sent Amer to solitary confinement, where he remains today.
They fight for peace. Peace, they say, peace of mind, peace on earth, peace of what kind? I see them talking, arguing, fighting. What kind of peace are they looking for? Why do they kill? What are they planning? Is it just talk? Why do they argue? Or is it a simple to kill? Is it their plan? Yes, of course. They talk, argue, they kill, they fight for peace.
Mohammed Al-Gharani, a 14-year-old Chad national raised in Saudi Arabia, had recently arrived in Pakistan to learn English and study information technology when he was arrested by Pakistani police. They hanged him by his wrists, nearly naked, his feet barely trusting the floor, and beat him if he moved. When told that he would be transferred to U.S. custody, he was overjoyed. But in the U.S. base at Kandahar, he was also stripped and beaten. In January of 2002, he was transferred to Guantanamo as one of the first enemy combatants. As many as 29 juveniles have been detained at Guantanamo in violation of international law.
First poem of my life, move it cautiously in the land of those who speak no Arabic. Even if they gave you the oaths bound by oaths, their aim is worship, petty cash, as far as they break all vows. I came to their land to pursue an education and saw much malice among them. They surrounded the mosque, weapons drawn, as if they were in the field of war. They said to us, come out peacefully. Don't utter a single word. Into a transport truck they lifted us. In shackles of injustice they bound us.
Abdulaziz had just graduated from a Saudi university when the U.S. attacked Afghanistan, where his brother was. He went to find him and bring him back safely, but both were picked up by Northern Alliance forces and tortured in an Afghan prison. In 2002, they were turned over to the U.S. and sent to Guantanamo. His brother was released, but Abdulaziz remains.
A boy may despair in the face of a problem, but we know God has a design. Even though the bands tighten and seem unbreakable, they will shatter. Those who persist will attain their goal. Those who keep knocking shall gain entry. O crisis intensify. The morning is about to break forth.
Abdullah Thani Fariz Al-Anazi is a double amputee, having lost both legs in a U.S. bombing campaign in Afghanistan while employed as a humanitarian aid worker. After his first leg was amputated, bounty hunters arrested him on his recovery bed and sold him to U.S. forces. While in custody, his second leg was amputated. He's been at Guantanamo since 2002, where he's received inadequate medical care. At times, he's been forced to walk on prosthetic limbs held together with duct tape.
To my father. 2 years have passed in faraway prisons. 2 years my eyes untouched by call. 2 years my heart sending out messages to the homes where my family dwells, where the lavender cotton sprouts for grazing herds that'll leave well fed. Pharisees explain those who visit our home how I used to live. I know your thoughts are swirled as in a whirlwind when you hear the voice of an anguished soul. Send sweet peace and greetings to Bumar. Kiss his forehead, for he is my father. Fate has divided us in the parting of a parent from a newborn.
Sami Al-Haj was a Sudanese journalist covering the conflict in Afghanistan for the TV station Al Jazeera when, in 2001, he was taken into custody and stripped of his passport and press card. In 2002, he was tortured at both Bagram Air Base and Kandahar before being transferred to Guantanamo. The U.S. military alleges that he was a financial courier for the Chechen rebels and assisted Al-Qaeda, but has offered no evidence to support these allegations.
humiliated in the shackles. When I heard pigeons cooing in the trees, hot tears covered my face. When the lark chirped, my thoughts composed a message for my son. Muhammad, I am affected. In my despair, I have no one but Allah to comfort. The oppressors are playing with me as they move freely about the world. They ask me to spy on my countrymen, claiming it would be a good deed. They offer me money and land and freedom to go where I please. Their temptation seize my attention like lightning in the sky, but their gift is evil snake, carrying on hypocrisy in the mouth like venom. They have moments to liberty and freedom of opinion, which is well and good, but I explain to them that the architecture is not justice.
Those were excerpts from Poems from Guantanamo, The Detainees Speak, edited by Mark Falkoff. The music was No Luck Club with Better Times Will Come, and Grails with Dead Vine Blues. We'll now break for Oh Freedom by Billy Bragg.
Policeman broke my door down, dragged me from my bed. I asked them what was happening, they just ignored the words I said. They waved their guns in my face, kept screaming out my name. Something terrible had happened, and somehow I was to blame. Oh freedom, what liberties are taken in thy name, in thy name. Oh freedom, what liberties are taken, what liberties are taken, what liberties are taken in thy name. My accusers form the jury, the judge and the defense. The charges were made known to me, but not the evidence. There was no guilty verdict, yet still I was detained, flown to another country where their methods are less constrained. Freedom, what liberties are taken in thy name, in thy name. Oh freedom, what liberties are taken, what liberties are taken, what liberties are taken in thy name. In our determination to defend democracy, we must not destroy the safeguards that underpin our liberty. For who will pay the prices? Injustice such as this turns our protectors to oppressors, and angry men to terrorists. Oh freedom, what liberties are taken in thy name, in thy name. Oh freedom, what liberties are taken, what liberties are taken, what liberties are taken in thy name. Thank you.
That was O Freedom by Billy Bragg. O Freedom, what liberties are taken in thy name. Bragg's use of the biblical thy is fitting. Every regime that employs torture is backed by a doctrine of their own moral superiority that sanctions it. To sanction is to sanctify, to make holy. It's the soul that dies first, and poetry, as a way back to honesty, is a way to reclaim our souls. There's an extraordinary essay about the power of poetry in another concentration camp. It's called Poetry in Buchenwald, and the author is Jacques Lusseron, the blind leader of the French youth resistance. At 17, Lusseron led an army of young people who published and delivered news about the Allies, keeping 1,500 phone numbers in his head to avoid having anything incriminating on paper. When he was 19, they were betrayed to the Gestapo. He was arrested, interrogated 38 times, and after 18 months was sent to Buchenwald. I think often of his advice to reconstruct the arguments of Kant on the eve of torture. It won't help, he says, but it's rigorous work that will pass the time. He writes, however, not about horror, but about joy, and how to find it even in the most wretched of circumstances. He describes a fellow inmate waking him, and eagerly reciting this phrase of Apollinaire. I know all sorts of people who are not equal to their lives. Their hearts are poorly smothered fires. Their hearts open and close like their doors. This snatch of poetry spoke to their experience and spread throughout the camp. Some months later, in the midst of a conversation, Lusseron recited some random verses by Baudelaire. Prisoners gathered around him and spontaneously began to repeat each line, 50 voices echoing his. Later, he learns that they are Ungar, Hungarians waiting for what the SS called transfer to the sky. They knew no French, but learned to recite whole stanzas of the death of the lovers. Recognizing that he was on to something important, Lusseron threw himself into a campaign of poetry. He mobilized every person to tap into whatever bits of verse and music they knew. With his prodigious memory from being blind, he became a repository and would recite at midday what he'd pieced together. Not every poet made the cut. The whiny and self-indulgent were rejected. But Victor Hugo triumphed. This devil of a man, he writes, entered our lives and mingled with us the moment a word of his was spoken. Baudelaire could find at the bottom of the darkest holes a little glimmer of light and make it burst before our eyes. He writes, I learned that poetry is an act, an incantation, a kiss of peace, a medicine, neither more nor less. I learned that poetry is one of the rare, very rare things in the world which can prevail over cold and hatred. No one had taught me this. A Jacques Lusseron of our age is Moazzam Begg, author of Enemy Combatant, My Imprisonment at Guantanamo, Bagram, and Kandahar. Begg was born in Birmingham to middle-class British Muslims, but all his life he was drawn to defend those who were victimized. His weapons, like Lusseron's, were truth, understanding, and words. He opened a bookshop that translated ancient Arabic texts, held forums for discussion, and sold educational materials and craft works. He used his profit to send books, clothes, and honey to Pakistan. He drove a convoy of humanitarian aid to Bosnians during the genocide. He opened a girls' school in Afghanistan and paid to build 10 wells in Kabul. On 9/11, he was in Kabul. The population there assumed that the U.S. would only attack bin Laden's camps in Kandahar. They were wrong. When the U.S. attacked Kabul, he was away from his wife and children. For 2 days, he trekked through bandit-filled mountains, fasting for Ramadan, blaming himself for bringing them into the very dangers he was trying to save others from. Once in Pakistan, he worked through aid organizations and got money from friends and family in England to hire search parties, but no one was hopeful. After 3 grueling weeks, they were finally united in Islamabad and were miraculously happy. They found they had a new baby on the way. The children were in school, and he made a new home. Although his father urged him to come back to Birmingham, Moazzam wanted to help the other refugee families who had helped him. 2 months later, he was abducted at midnight and imprisoned for the next 3 years. The only evidence were his emails on sending honey to Pakistan, which was interpreted as a code word for explosives. I urge everyone to read Enemy Combatant for the details, which I can't convey in a paragraph. Moazzam's stories are of kindness and humanity, breaking through the darkness of brutality and ignorance. He's predisposed to see the good in everyone, and each guard and inmate is an individual to whom he relates. Woven into his account are conversations about philosophy, not of the anemic academic variety, but like Lucerne's poetry, the essential questions, the lifeblood of the soul. Each morning the detainees have a ritual in which each one within their cell greets every other detainee by name. He finds that even though through his years of solitary confinement they had remembered him. In one debate over bin Laden, he and another prisoner argue the Islamic law to never target a place where there are women and children or uninvolved citizens. The other Muslim points out the Marine anthem about the shores of Tripoli that brags about a U.S. naval raid on Libya. He says the establishment of a Jewish state in the occupied territories could only happen with U.S. support. He cites the genocide of Muslims in Libya, Iraq, Somalia, and how attacks, sanctions, and trade embargoes have caused the deaths of 5,000 Iraqi children each month. U.S. citizens, he states, elect their leaders and their foreign policies. The 9/11 targets were the military, executive, and economic arms of this indiscriminate violence, not innocent civilians, he argues, but people who had the ability to know. Against this argument, Moazzam Beg lays out the Prophet's rules for military engagement, which clearly outlaw targeting women, children, old men, priests, civilians, and even trees. They forbid torture, mutilation, and death by fire, and they free prisoners of war if they can teach Muslims to read and write. It made me realize that the Islam we see in the media is a reactionary extremism, created by our utter immorality. No matter who's right in their debate, the U.S. is wrong. While others are risking their lives and freedom for what they believe in, we only believe in what might make us money. This has been Teresa Caraggio with Third Paradigm. Thanks to Skidmark Bob for production, music, and lending his voice to Guantanamo detainees. Our closing song is Empty Walls by Serge Tankian.
Attention, dismissive apprehension. Don't waste your time on coffins today. When we decline from the confines of our mind, don't waste your time on coffins today. Don't you see their bodies burning, desolate and full of yearning, dying of anticipation, choking from intoxication? Don't you see their bodies burning? I want you to be left behind those empty walls. Don't you to see from behind those empty walls? Thank you.
to us when we decline from the confines of our mind. Don't waste your time on coffins today.
Don't you see their bodies burning, desolate and full of yearning, dying of anticipation, choking from intoxication? Don't you see their bodies burning? Empty walls, the walls from behind those empty walls, from behind those empty walls, from behind those empty walls, the walls.
Don't you see their bodies burning?
Don't you see their bodies burning? Time.